Chapter 48. The Sabres dropped out of the Mon Mothma's forward fighter bay and saw Coruscant's thumb-sized disk twinkling at them through a gap in the Yuuzhan Vong fleet, the planet's trillion-light aura a genial reminder of what they were fighting to protect. Ben was down there beneath one of those lights, sleeping soundly in his aunt's apartment, and dreaming of his mother's return. That much Mara could feel through the Force. What she could not feel was when his dream would be answered. Despite the steady flow of New Republic reinforcements, even Admiral Akbar was rumored to be on his way with a Mon Calamari fleet, the Yuuzhan Vong continued to press their advance. Their route-in system could be traced by the swath of derelict vessels littering space. But they still had half their fleet, and now they were within sight of Coruscant. It was as close to her child as Mara intended to let them come. A sheet of blue energy lit space overhead as the Mon Mothma's turbolaser banks opened fire again. A moment later, a Yuuzhan Vong frigate vanished from the tactical display, and the cockpit sensor alarms started to scream as a flight of skips headed their way. Wedge Antilles' voice came over the comm. "All squadrons, stand by for close defense. This time we're going to make them stop and pay attention." Mara was engulfed by the reassuring warmth of her husband's Force touch. "He's going to be all right," Luke said. "We're not going to let anything happen to him." Blue eyes widening as the safe band narrowed, the Bail Organa's young comm officer asked, "Shall I ask Planetary Defense to deactivate a mine sector for us, General?" Garmbel Iblis twirled his mustache and, ignoring the tactical display on the bridge's wall screen, stared out the viewport at the plasma storm blossoming against the Star Destroyer's forward shields. Between flashes, it was just possible to see a swarm of blocky silhouettes moving forward behind the assault, rapidly swelling into the shapes of New Republic starliners and mass transports. Never one to substitute technology for his own judgment, he knew instinctively that the refugee screen would be on him in less than a minute, just as he knew that Planetary Defense would need to deactivate two sectors of mines, not one, if Fleet Group 2 was going to withdraw an order. "General?" the young woman asked. "I have an open channel to Planetary Defense." "Very good, Anga." Garm's eyes shot briefly to the tactical display, where he saw that with all the defections from Fleet Group 1, his force was actually larger than at the beginning of the battle. "You may tell Planetary Defense to keep all sectors of the mine shell active. We won't be retreating." Anga's face went as pale as her hair. "Excuse me, General?" "Give me an open channel to all fleet groups," Garm ordered. "I'll need to say a few words." Located in a repulsor-equipped satellite hovering on a station in front of the Yuuzhan Vong invasion route, Orbital Defense Headquarters was as large as a Mon Calamari floating city, and the control hub at its heart was the size of a full shockball court. Despite being packed to overflowing with weapons directors and traffic coordinators, the nerve center was also, at the moment Lando followed his escort through the hatch, as still as space. Noting that every pair of eyes in the place was fixed on the ceiling, Lando lifted his chin and found himself staring through a large transparasteel dome at a vast abyss of spiraling magma trails and blossoming fireballs. Some of the explosions appeared close enough to lick the shields. Lando's instinct was to drop for cover and crawl back to the Lady Luck as quickly as his hands and knees would carry him. But it was a matter of pride with him never to be the first to panic. Despite what his eyes were telling him, the station remained stable, and, in a room packed with electronics, there was not a single crackle of pulse static. In a deliberately calm voice, he asked, "Optical sealing?" "That's right." His escort, a winsome petty officer who would have made even Tendra frown with jealousy, said,
"Sometimes it helps to point the station and see what's going on."
"Uh-huh," Lando said. Now that he was sorting out the scene, he could see the blue circles of several thousand ion drives receding into the firestorm. Garmbel Iblis had turned on the invaders like a cornered wampa, and Fleet Group 2
was accelerating through the refugee screen to meet the enemy head-on. New Republic corvettes and frigates were vanishing by the dozens. Cruisers and Star Destroyers were belching fire and falling away one after another. Lando took his comlink off his belt and opened a channel to Tendra. "Have you finished with the weapons platforms yet?"
"I'm making the last delivery now," she answered. "There's still an open shield section on the far side of the planet, so I thought I'd drop the extras at the Imperial Palace."
"You'd better hold off on that," Lando said. "I think they'll be closing that hole shortly. I'll meet you at our rendezvous."
"When?"
Tendra sounded worried. "Soon," Lando replied. "Very soon." The petty officer leaned through the hatch and summoned the two YVH war droids Lando was delivering, then led the way across the control hub. By the time they had twined their way through the maze of aisles and checkpoints to the lift tube on the other side, Fleet Group 2 had penetrated the refugee screen and was webbing the darkness beyond with turbolaser fire. The hostage ships themselves were accelerating forward, their dark shapes backlit by blue halos of ion glow. The petty officer pressed her palm to a security pad to authorize access, then led Lando and his droids onto the command deck. Though General Batra was already surrounded by aides and junior command officers, all speaking to him at once, the Bothan motioned the newcomers over immediately. Muzzle curled into a faint snarl, he looked the war droids over and grunted approval. Gratified to finally find someone who appreciated the craftsmanship of the droids, Lando smiled warmly and extended his hand. "General Batra, how nice to meet—"
"Cash it, Calrissian," Batra snarled. "We're in the middle of a battle."
Lando let his hand drop with his spirits, but kept the smile.
"Yes, sir, that's why I'm donating these war droids to your security detail."
"Donating?"
"Free of charge," Lando confirmed.
Batra looked doubtful.
"And what do you get in return?"
"Nothing yet," Lando said. "These are good droids, and I'm just trying to preserve the market long enough for people to realize that."
"Preserve the market?"
The Bothan smiled wryly, then plinked a claw off YVH-1302A's armor.
"Quantum?
Better," Lando said, deliberately duplicating the general's brusque manner. Echoing the customer's tone was one of his most effective sales techniques. "Laminanium. Developed it ourselves."
"Ah."
Sensing the Bothan's approval, Lando said, "I have 20 more aboard the Lady Luck, if you have a use for them."
"They're not spoken for?"
Lando shook his head. "This is my last stop." A flare of orange light strobed through the control hub's observation dome as a pair of space mines fired their rockets and accelerated toward a Raltiri refugee vessel. The converted freighter's shields absorbed the detonation of the first mine, but the second slammed into the bow, igniting a wave of secondary explosions that vaporized the ship stem to stern.
"Answers that question,"
Batra commented, watching the vessel explode.
"Definitely Vong guards aboard."
A flickering sheet of orange filled the control hub as a dozen more mine rockets ignited. The faces of the general's assistants fell, and a Bith female asked,
"Shall I have Sector 223 deactivate, General?"
Before answering, Batra turned to consult a tactical display hanging on the command deck wall. Wedge's Fleet Group 3 was sweeping down from behind, but even a quick glance at the situation revealed that Garm's force could not hold the Yuuzhan Vong in place. While the remnants of Fleet Group 2 had already carved out a sizable hollow at the front of the column, enemy vessels were sweeping past on all sides, chasing the refugee ships toward the mine shell. The orange light in the control hub died away suddenly and was not replaced by the flash of detonating mines. Batra's head snapped back long enough to take in the sight of a dozen refugee vessels streaking through the mine shell unimpeded. The Bothan whirled on the Bith, who had suggested deactivating the sector.
"I did not authorize that."
What little color there was faded from the Bith's face.
"Neither did I."
Batra snatched his comlink from a pocket and stepped to the transparisteel wall that overlooked the control hub's main floor.
"Activate Sector 223.
The Bothan was staring at a lone Mon Calamari seated 40 meters away in the heart of the giant floor. She merely folded her hands in her lap and looked out the ceiling. The mind controllers flanking her did likewise.
"I see."
Batra snapped his comlink off and turned to Lando.
"Are your droids as adept at dealing with traitors as they are infiltrators?"
Lando glanced at the controllers and swallowed, not certain that he wanted to answer truthfully.
"Do you know how quickly the enemy will reach us once they have cleared the mine shell?"
Batra asked. "And I should mention that you will not be leaving this station until I have an answer."
"You designate targets and issue an override command," Lando said.
"Which is?"
Lando did not answer, for his thoughts were suddenly full of thrust calculations and pitfalls.
"Calrissian, General,
do you have any way to keep your minds from targeting your orbital defense platforms?"
Batra scowled, but looked to an Arcona assistant.
"We could give them the deactivation codes," the aide suggested.
"With a tight beam transmission, they could kill the warhead and let the mine bounce off their shields."
"Good," Lando said. "Then I suggest you deactivate all sectors."
"What?"
"Let them through," Lando clarified. "The refugees, the Yuuzhan Vong, everyone."
Batra's eyes narrowed in thought, and Lando could see that the general was already thinking along the same lines. This particular Bothan, at least, deserved his post.
After a moment, Batra asked, "You know what will happen when those ships hit the planetary shields?"
Lando shrugged. "Your mines might stop the first 100 ships."
"Not even that many,"
the Bith said.
"So you might as well put your assets to their best use."
Batra glanced up at the stream of hostage vessels pouring through the deactivated sector toward the surface of Coruscant. The first transports were already vanishing behind the rim of the observation dome, long needles of ion efflux trailing them as they accelerated into the planetary shield.
"You know this won't save the hostages?"
Batra asked.
"But at least the New Republic won't be the ones killing them," Lando said.
"And it just might save Coruscant." A bowl of golden light rose from the planet as the first refugee ship disintegrated against the shield. Batra winced, then nodded.
"Very well, Calrissian. Do it."
Lando's jaw fell.
"Me?" "Your idea, your assignment," the Bothan said. "I'll have someone fetch you some stars, General. You've just been reactivated."
By the time Fleet Group 3 connected with Fleet Group 2, local space was too littered with battle debris to enter at anything approaching combat speed. Through the flotsam cloud, Mara could see half a dozen Star Destroyers and perhaps 20 or 30 smaller vessels using their turbolasers to clear an exit path, but even they were barely crawling. At least half were venting bodies and atmosphere, and a dozen were moving only under the power of a nearby vessel's tractor beam. Clearly, Garmbel Iblis and his followers were out of the battle. The Yuuzhan Vong rearguard was pouring around the devastation on all sides, trading fusillades with Fleet Group 1 as they streamed past into the deactivated mine shell. Triest Crefe had apparently chosen not to engage until he joined up with Wedge's group. The few thousand vessels remaining to him were all standing off, content to attack from a distance, while the invaders poured into orbit and swarmed Coruscant's defense platforms. Though they were badly outnumbered, Mara found it difficult to believe the Admiral would be so cowardly. Despite his Bothan heritage, he had always struck her as an honorable soldier and loyal citizen. The scene at the edges of Coruscant's atmosphere made Mara's heart race for Ben's safety. A 1,000-kilometer circle of shield glowed gold beneath the constant bombardment of hostage ships. Every new impact launched a kilometer's high pillar of fire and sent shock circles rippling across the surface. Occasionally, a refugee vessel broke away at the last second as the crew finally overpowered their captors. Every attempt ended badly, with the craft crashing into the shield anyway, or being blasted out of space by a waiting frigate, or disintegrating under the stress of trying to escape. For the most part, the Yuuzhan Vong suicide squads were forcing the pilots to hit the same area,
and the largest detonations were already causing forks of disruption static to dance across the shield.
Danny Kui's voice came over the channel.
"We've got another Yamask."
Mara dropped her gaze to the tactical display, where a targeting box had appeared around a heavy cruiser already deep inside the mine shell. A dozen weary sighs sounded from the comm speaker. This would be Eclipse's fourth Yamask kill. They had taken out the second one with Saba's glowball tactic, but the third kill had cost so many pilots that Luke had reorganized Eclipse's forces into a single wing of 2 15-pilot squadrons. When Danny had detected no more gravitic pulses, they had all dared hope that they had killed the last one, but it now seemed apparent the invaders had been holding it in reserve. Luke opened a channel to the Mon Mothma.
"We'll need that support, Command."
During their last rearming break, Wedge had offered the support of both Rogue Squadron and the Wraiths, who were being tapped for combat duty despite their status as an intelligence unit, for the next Yamask attack.
"This is a tough one."
"Negative, farm boy," Wedge responded. "You are not authorized for attack."
Mara felt Luke bristle and knew how tired he was. Luke never let himself get so angry she could feel it.
"This is not time to be looking out for old buddies, Command. You can see how desperate things are. If we don't take out that—"
"I said no,"
Wedge interrupted.
"I can't order you to hold back, but trust me. There are some things I can't say over a combat channel."
Mara felt Luke perform the Jedi equivalent of counting 10. They still had no reason to believe the Yuuzhan Vong could eavesdrop on their communications, much less break military codes. But the same could not be said for the refugee ships. If any of those pilots happened to be smugglers in the Han Solo or Talon Card mold, they would have the finest comm-scanning equipment in the galaxy.
"Copy," Luke said. "Let us know when we have authorization. Count on it."
"Wedge?"
Mara was as surprised as anyone to hear herself saying Wedge's name over the comm, and even she wasn't sure why she had done it until she asked,
"Can you patch me through to Coruscant Civil Communications?"
There was a slight pause, then Wedge said,
"Sure, we can do that. Who do you want to talk to?"
"My brother-in-law," she said.
The curiosity she felt from Luke lasted only as long as it took the next refugee ship to strike Coruscant's shields. This time the disruption static shrank back on itself and burned through the shields. Two more vessels crashed beside the hull, enlarging it by a factor of 10. Then a third pilot guided his lumbering starliner through the breach to safety. The comm channels crackled with an odd sort of half-cheer as Fleet Group 3 gave voice to the jubilation of finally seeing a refugee ship survive. The accolade ceased when a pair of Yuuzhan Vong frigates darted through the hole after it. Han Solo's voice came over the comm speaker.
"Mara, what happened?"
The channel was full of static. "Is Luke—"
"He's fine," Mara interrupted. "Listen to me. The shields are going. Can you get Ben off-planet?"
"3PO is already packing," Han said. "We'll be in the air as soon as we can reach the Falcon."
"Thank you."
There was an awkward pause during which Mara found herself caught between saying again how sorry she was and apologizing for thinking Anakin's mission had been a good idea. Then she asked,
"How's Leia?"
"Hanging on,"
Han answered. Mara flashed on an image of Leia clutching Ben to her breast. Then Han said,
"We'll see ya."
He switched off, leaving Mara and Luke alone with the war. She felt Luke reaching out to her through the Force, trying to fill her with a sense of reassurance she could tell he did not quite feel himself. "I'm fine, Luke," she thought. But Mara could feel Luke's irritation mounting as well. Even Master Ernest was growing impatient with this strange game of follow and wait. More than a dozen Yuuzhan Vong vessels slipped through the overload breach into Coruscant's atmosphere before planetary shielding finally brought a replacement generator online. Fleet Group 3 was almost at the mine shell when Wedge gave the order to cease pursuit. Though there had not been an enemy vessel close enough for X-Wings to fire at in 20 minutes,
Luke ordered the Sabres and Wild Knights to take up static combat stations 200 kilometers ahead of the Star Destroyer. Puzzled by Wedge's hesitation, both squadrons settled in to watch the deadly light storm being hurled back and forth by the big capital ships. The puzzle was solved less than a minute later, when the entire mine shell sprouted rocket candles. The capital ships ceased firing. An astonished silence fell over the comm channels, as the mines locked onto enemy vessels and curved after them. The Yuuzhan Vong maneuvered wildly, but they were trapped against Coruscant with nowhere to go. No sooner would they escape one mine than they ran afoul of another. Some vessels skimmed the planetary shields and were instantly torn into rubble. A few collided with each other, and still others grew so distracted they fell prey to missiles and turbolaser fire from the orbital defense platforms. Eventually, the Yuuzhan Vong realized they were better off to stop and weather the storm, relying on their weapons and shielding singularities to destroy the approaching mines. Many failed and were blasted into rubble. 1,000 more suffered hull breaches and began to vent internal systems. Almost all took at least one hit, but an astonishing number showed little sign of damage. They returned to their missions, attacking the orbital defense platforms and herding refugee ships to destruction. Then, almost as one, the crippled Yuuzhan Vong vessels dropped out of orbit, hurling themselves into the planetary shields. Disruption static shot across the atmosphere. Whole grids shimmered and winked out. Planet-bound generator stations exploded with flashes brilliant enough to be seen from space. Skips began to drop off the surviving Yuuzhan Vong vessels and dive toward the surface. On Mara's tactical display, the cruiser carrying the fourth Yamask was blinking slowly to show damage, but it was still intact, drifting toward the sunny side of the planet.
"Okay, farm boy," Wedge calmed. "Now you are authorized to attack."